Hello and welcome to the Business Standard Morning Show. I'm Swapnil Joglekar. Let's take a look at the stories for the day. India's rank in ease of doing business has improved from 142 in 2014 to 63 in 2022. A slew of schemes and steps taken by the government led to this improvement. But clearly, there is a long stretch to cover. The government is now planning to integrate all the different identities of businesses into one single identity, Permanent Account Number or PAN. The motivation behind this is to optimize operations and allow better data sharing. So exactly how will it help businesses? And are there any challenges? Find out in this report by Tushar Verma.
Business Standard recently reported that the government is mulling making Permanent Account Number, or PAN, as the single identifier for businesses. The decision is likely to be announced in the upcoming Union Budget. The government is also planning to give it statutory backing by amending the Finance Act. In 2019, India was ranked 62nd among 190 countries in ease of doing business by the World Bank. In June 2022, the country was ranked 37th in World Competitiveness Ranking by IMD Business School, Switzerland. Clearly, there is a long way to go.
Using PAN as a single data point for a national single window system clearance, it's a very thoughtful initiative of government, which is going to certainly increase or enhance the ranking of India in terms of doing business. Okay. In terms of linking the PAN, the multiple registration will be tracked and used by this particular PAN system.
This move by the government is based on a report by a working group under the Finance Ministry. The group in its report had suggested that making PAN the single identifier will ease compliance burden and optimize business operations. It also said that with a single ID, data sharing among various government agencies and departments will be enhanced as well.
You know, when I look at the burden of compliance, I don't think the compliance requirements will go down. So whatever are the compliance requirements under different legislation which are there, I think they will continue. The only thing that will make it simpler is that the compliance process will be easier in terms of taking registrations for different, you know, type of compliances which need to be done. If you need a separate registration, then those will become easier.
India is known for its startup industry. As of August 2022, there were 77,000 startups in the country. Among these startups, 100 are unicorns. A unicorn is a startup which is valued at $1 billion or more. Of these 100 unicorns, India produced more than half of them, 58 to be precise, since the beginning of 2021. India is ranked third among countries with the largest number of unicorns. While this sounds good, India is far behind its competitors, China and USA. While China has more than double the number of unicorns in India, the USA has a whopping 8 times more. The decision to integrate PAN into a single identifier is also aimed at streamlining the process of starting a business.
So what happens today is that when I am looking at doing any business, there are different registrations. You know, there are almost around 20 registrations which one needs to take. You know, you have to take your GSTN registration separately, your tax deduction registration separately, your permanent account number separately, you know. So once you have one number, which is an identifier number, then you don't really need to take separate registrations. Your one number will cover all those registrations put together. So that is how it would help in making it more easy.
As of now, there are about 20 different types of identifiers for a business. These identifiers include GSTN, Taxpayer Identification Number, Corporate Identification Number, Employees Provident Fund Organization, and Tax Deduction Account Number. The reason for choosing PAN as the base identifier was because of its wide acceptability, relevance, and comprehensive coverage. However, this move may prove to be troublesome for unit-level entities as PAN may not cover them.
The absolute micro businesses which are owned by proprietors Really, we could double the normal PAN card for the PAN card which is now being envisaged. So it is redundant to have a special dispensation for them because they already have it. People are still a little skeptical about making sure that their personalized data does not get into the wrong hands. But in any case, if you become a taxpayer or you're about to become a taxpayer, then you need to have a PAN card anyway. So you would then be able to multi-use the PAN card which you already have.
At present, Know Your Customer or KYC for corporates requires multiple documents. These documents range from corporate identity number, memorandum and articles of association, to proof of addresses and business commencement certificates. The move to integrate all of these documents and more into PAN is aimed at reducing the number of filings for KYC. The idea is to reduce duplication of data, provide uniform ground for identification and regulatory approvals, and reduce paperwork.
With this multiple KYCs prevailing everywhere, so if you have to take a registration with GST, you have to provide the same documentation. If you have to go to the bank, you have to provide all your PAN, Aadhaar, everything. So for each and every department at the time of registration, you are required to provide the similar sort of documentation. So this is a repetition and duplication in terms of efforts, in terms of paperwork, etc. At the time of registration with the MCA for company registration, now they have introduced this concept called Agile Pro. So if you have provided information, obtained the PAN number, your GST, your bank account, everything will be obtained automatically. So this kind of system is very much, I think it's a very welcome move by the government, and it will definitely reduce the compliance burden and ease of doing business.
The PAN card integration is also envisioned to leverage the National Single Window System, or NSWS. The government came up with NSWS as a digital platform that eases seeking regulatory approvals. Approvals from about 26 central government departments are hosted on the platforms which businesses can check and apply for. Further, about 19 state governments have also listed their approvals on NSWS. It is expected that using PAN as a single ID will further facilitate the process of receiving approvals from NSWS and at the same time increase its usage. So, how will it be done?
On the top of the identity layer, you can layer a service layer. You can layer e-governance. You can provide all access to government services. If you want a business to go through all its multiple permissions, which it needs to get started, you could do it based on the PAN card, which then becomes your identity. So it's very important to, one, first make the statement, establish an identity, then make it transferable, interoperable, and therefore the national service will become accessible to a large number of businesses and people in India.
The decision by the government to integrate PAN into a single identity for businesses will decrease the occurrences of duplication of data. This will be achieved by doing away with the need for multiple KYC and easing compliance requirements. It is expected to improve ease of doing business. However, for proprietor-owned businesses, it may be a hassle since they already use PAN for majority of their compliance and approvals. It remains to be seen what operational guidelines and procedures the government comes up with in its last budget before the general elections of 2024.
There is another sector which is aiming for the stars now due to the government's push. The centre had opened the sky for private players about 2 years ago. Now, the Kerala government has decided to move ahead with the plan of building a space park in Trivandrum. Another such space park in the making is in Bengaluru. These parks will give private companies and startups the platform to make launch vehicles, satellites and other components for the sector. But are these space parks ready to take off? And how will they help private players in their ambition to capture the global market? Tariq Ahmed brings you the answers.
the Kerala government has decided to allot over 18 acres of land and 2 crore rupees seed capital to build a space park in the state's capital city, Thiruvananthapuram. A space park gives space tech companies the platform to manufacture space technology. They provide the ecosystem and expertise for research and manufacturing. Most private companies don't have the capital and resources to establish such a park on their own.
What would it be? A space park, as I would say, would be a combination of a technology park and an economic zone. It would provide the basic backbone of, say, broadband, infrastructure, conference halls, testing facilities, which can be used by multiple players, then multiple domain players of different verticals of space can be at one place. And a great opportunity to startups who do not have their own infrastructures, but can use this facility to grow.
Kerala had announced the space park plan back in 2019. Vikram Sarabhai Space Center was supposed to lead the development, but administrative and technical issues delayed this project. The government had initially allotted 2 acres of land, which was not sufficient for such a project.
You need land. Otherwise, where will you start manufacturing? And aerospace manufacturing is not electronics manufacturing that you can have a, you know, 5, 6, 7 story building, and in that you can probably, you know, do what you want to do. Here you need space, right? And then you also need to transport. So for transportation, you need, at times, I mean, when we go forward in any aerospace park, you need a runway so that aircrafts can land. I'm not talking about the particular one, but generally all aerospace and space parks need a runway. So this means that there is a great requirement of land. Initially, I think just about 2 acres of land was allotted to begin with. And Vikram Sarabhai Space Center obviously wanted more. They also wanted to build a space museum.
According to Ratan Srivastava, considering Kerala's geography, which naturally has a shortage of land, finding and allotting land was difficult and became a hindrance for the space park to take off. But things are changing for the better now, and the private sector too has been allowed to operate in the sphere. For a long time, ISRO was the sole stakeholder that had been manufacturing launch vehicles and satellites and providing infrastructure for space missions in the country. But the space business and demand for space technology has been growing all across the globe, and it was important to allow private companies to carry out independent space activities. So, in June 2020, the central government decided to open up the space sector for private companies. Since then, more and more private players have been entering the space tech sector in India. According to ISPA, the Indian Space Association, India now has more than 300 registered private space companies. Of them, 101 are startups. Dhruva Space Private Limited, Agnikul Cosmos, Skyroot Aerospace, Pixel, Digantara and Azista Aerospaces are some of the private companies that are in the space tech industry in India. Skyroot Aerospace developed the first privately developed rocket, Vikram S, and launched it last November. India's first ever private launch pad facility has been designed by Agnikul Cosmos and will be ready to launch rockets from this year. Two more private manufacturers from India, Dhruva Space and Digantara, have already launched their payloads last year. Azista, another Hyderabad-based aerospace company, has joined hands with a German aerospace company called Berlin Space Technology and developed a satellite production capacity in Ahmedabad. It was reported that the private aerospace companies invested a total of $108 million in India last year. It is a considerable amount when compared to the $1.5 billion of total budget for the space sector in India. So far, two manufacturing clusters have been announced in India. Apart from the one in Kerala, the other one is in Karnataka. Karnataka was the first to announce a state-led aerospace park near Kempegowda International Airport in 2016. It was named Karnataka Industrial Area Development Board Aerospace Park. In June 2022, Anant Technologies started a spacecraft manufacturing unit in the space park. In November 2022, another private company, Bellatrix, announced a research and development facility worth $76 million in a 5-acre facility at the Karnataka Aerospace Park. According to reports, another state that is moving towards setting up the same kind of manufacturing cluster is Telangana. So, how will these common infrastructure clusters, like the ones in Kerala and Karnataka, help private companies, especially startups?
The space park is also being based out of Trivandrum, Kerala, which is also the same city as the Vikram Sarabhai Space Center. We expect that Vikram Sarabhai Space Center being the largest center in the ISRO ecosystem. So it will get a lot of benefit, technical help, and also guidance and assistance from the largest ISRO center, right? And its scientists. So that way, like technically also, it will be like very relevant, and also like the timing wise also it is relevant if they're able to establish common infrastructure for all the startups.
Also, how is the Kerala Space Park project progressing, and how will it help private players?
As I said, well begun is half done. This is just the beginning. The other challenges would also be for the Kerala state government to give offices on lien, on loan, on contract to the government of to VSSC and to the SPV, because we cannot expect VSSC scientists to be doing all the administrative running around and getting things in order and getting the construction done. So all those things will need a lot of effort, political administrative effort from the government of Kerala as well as from KSIITL. And of course, VSSC will be willing to do whatever needs to be done.
Despite the challenges of building such an ecosystem, space parks are crucial as they have the potential to give Indian space technology a boost. As a result, India could even become an exporter of such technology and services. But before that, it is clear that complex administrative and technical challenges will have to be surmounted.
Moving on to markets, as against expectations, IT firms withstood the global uncertainty and delivered firm results in the December quarter, supported by strong deal wins and improved margins. So how will the Q3 earnings impact the beaten down IT shares amid persisting global risks? Let's find out in this report by Harshita Singh and Rex Kano.
Shares of IT giants started the new week on a firm ground, with Tech Mahindra, Infosys, HCL Tech, Wipro and TCS closing up to 3% higher in Monday's week session. The positive moves came as the sector surprised the street last week with its resilient performance in the seasonally weak December quarter. The better-than-expected results were led by strong traction in deal wins. Notably, TCS, Infosys, HCL Tech and Wipro cumulatively won deals worth around $18 billion, reflecting sustained demand and client spending. Companies, however, cautioned on delays in decision-making by clients, especially in Europe. Against this backdrop, analysts remain cautious on the sector in the near term.
IT industry have demonstrated strong execution in Q3 FY23, despite of having challenges like furloughs, a seasonally weak quarter, and uncertainties from the world's largest economies. Coming on to the revenue side, majority of the IT companies have reported strong set of numbers, beating the street expectations and demonstrated strong execution. Coming on to the deal wins came strong and better than expected, shown a strong resilience in terms of demand and the IT spending from the world's largest economies. The outlook for the IT companies is likely to be remain resilient as the uncertainties still persist, and we expect IT industry to grow cautiously for the couple of quarters. However, the long-term outlook remain strong.
Besides, margin expansion largely played out as expected during the quarter, with three of the top four companies posting sequential EBIT margin improvement of 50 to 165 basis points, led by higher utilization and fall in attrition. Experts see the margin trend continuing going ahead. Among stocks, Tangsale of Axis Securities prefers Infosys from large caps, while Jefferies expects premium valuations of TCS and HCL Tech to weigh on the duo with a limited upside. Meanwhile, Macquarie has initiated coverage of six mid-cap IT stocks with an outperform rating, as it expects digital transformation to be a multi-year growth driver for the industry. The brokerage's top picks are Persistent Systems and LTI Mindtree, which can see an upside of as much as 110%, followed by Coforge and Birlasoft. That said, HCL Tech looks strong on technical charts, while Wipro may struggle ahead.
The upmove in Infosys lacks conviction. The stock is expected to face considerable resistance in the ₹1560 to ₹1580 range. On the downside, ₹1450 remains a key support level. TCS, since the end of October, has been broadly trading in a range of 3200 to 3450. The stock seems on course to test the higher end of the prevailing trading range. The stock may, however, gain strength on sustained trade above 3400. On the downside, ₹3280 is the near-term support. Technically, HCL Technologies is the strongest among its peers. The stock is likely to trade with a bullish bias as long as it holds above 1040 to 1065 range. On the upside, the stock can rally to 1200. And Wipro by far has been the worst performer among the IT pack. At present levels, the stock is still down 45% from its January 2022 peak. The stock is currently attempting to survive above its 20 WMA at ₹394. As long as the stock holds above it, it can rally to 410 and 435 odd levels.
Today, the market will seek direction from its global peers. Q3 results of Bank of India, ICICI Lombard, ICICI Prudential, and Tata Elxsi will also be on the street's radar.
Now let us shift the focus to the ongoing tussle between the judiciary and the legislature. Vice President Jagdeep Dhankar questioned the landmark Kesav Nand Bharti case verdict last week, saying it set a wrong precedent. In the 1973 case, the Supreme Court had laid down the basic structure of the Constitution doctrine. Today, we tell you more about this doctrine.
Vice President Jagdeep Dhankar last week criticized the 1970 Keshavananda Bharati judgment, which gave way to the basic structure doctrine of the Constitution, saying it is a bad precedent. He said that if any authority questions Parliament's power to amend the Constitution, it would be difficult to say that India is a democratic nation. Dhankar added that parliamentary sovereignty and autonomy are important for the survival of democracy and cannot be permitted to be compromised by neither executive nor judiciary. He also highlighted the court's decision to quash the National Judicial Appointments Commission Act for judicial appointments. The basic structure of the Constitution is a set of features which cannot be changed or altered even by Parliament's amendments. They represent the core values of the Constitution. The doctrine has evolved over the years, but most came into being in the 1973 judgment of Keshavananda Bharti case. Since India's independence, the apex court has time and again revised its stance on the Parliament's power to amend the Constitution. In the 1951 Shankari Prasad case, it said that the Parliament had absolute power to amend the Constitution. It reiterated its stance in the 1965 Sajjan Singh case. The Parliament was given the power to amend any part of the Constitution, including the fundamental rights. However, in the 1967 Golaknath case, the Supreme Court ruled that Parliament cannot amend fundamental rights. Finally, in 1973, the Keshavananda Bharti case said that the Parliament can introduce changes, but they should not alter the basic structure of the Constitution. In 1970, the hereditary head of the Hindu Mutt in Kerala's Kasargod district, Kesavananda Bharti, moved to court to challenge the state government's two land reform laws to restrict the management of religious properties. The constitutional bench ruled that Parliament could amend any part of the Constitution as long as it did not alter its essential features. Every provision of the Constitution could be amended, but these amendments can be subjected to judicial review. No clear definition of the term basic structure was given in any judgment. Some principles like federalism, secularism, and democracy were listed as their components. Over the years, the Supreme Court, through its various judgments, has shaped the concept, and now it includes supremacy of the Constitution, rule of law, an independent judiciary, federalism, a sovereign democratic republic, the welfare state, a parliamentary system of government, and principle of free and fair elections, among other features.
backed by the nation's trusted bank, SBI, the banker to every Indian.
The basic structure doctrine has its origins in post-war German constitution law. Before this law, the German parliament had sweeping powers, which helped Hitler in his quest to gain complete control over Germany. That's all for today. Catch the next episode of The Morning Show tomorrow. Thank you for watching.
For more news, views and updates, subscribe to Business Standard on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast and Spotify. Also follow us on YouTube, Vimeo, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn.